Next case is United States v. Chisholm. The appellant may argue.
Good morning, Chief Judge Stege, members of the court, and may it please the court. I am Major Jarrett Merkin, along with Colonel Jane Boomer, represent the appellant, Senior Airman Ricky Chisholm. If I may, Your Honor, I would like to reserve 4 minutes of rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. The government's conviction in this case is hanging by a thread, and that thread is the credibility of ABCR. But the defense counsel was denied the opportunity to present the theory that ABCR should not be believed because he lacks the capacity to accurately perceive the event that he testified to and accurately recall that event 3 years later.
Counsel, was he prevented from presenting that theory, or is the issue whether there was a limitation with respect to what could be introduced in support of that theory, or something else?
Your Honor, the judge's ruling excluded him from presenting that theory. The issue was an admissibility of evidence issue, and the trial judge's ruling effectively excluded evidence. And I'd refer this court to the reasoning under U.S. v. Wooderich, which showed that a ruling on excluding evidence, and that was in the Article 62 context, but it was in a motion to quash a subpoena, which is substantially similar to the context we have here. But the reasoning under that was this court held that an order excluding evidence was one that limits the pool of potentially admissible substance in substance or in form, and it didn't require a specific or formal ruling on admissibility, and it included that. Also,
did Wooderich say that it precluded a theory?
Well, under the facts of that case, Your Honor, that was an in-camera review similar to here, and it was based on a showing of what potentially would be in the CBS outtakes.
Right, but I'm focusing on your opening remarks in which you said that the defense was precluded from presenting a theory without going into any sealed material. What theory was precluded here as opposed to what evidence in support of the theory was precluded?
The theory that was prevented was that there was a direct link between mental health or emotional defects and his ability to perceive the event that he was testifying to and remember that 3 years later. It was that link that was the critical issue in this he said case.
Could you flesh that out a little bit more? Because it seems that they were capable of making that link to the military judge, and that's the link that they were basing their request for access to the mental health documents on.
Yes, Your Honor. It's a qualitative difference between somebody who has memory and perception issues, but believes that they remember the event accurately on the stand, and for example, somebody who would have a mental disorder like Alzheimer's, and that they lack the capacity.
What's that add? Or that seems, if anything, just cumulative. It got in that these guys are heavy drug users. It got in that these guys have memory problems. They admitted to it. I mean, that's, you know, you're going to their credibility, you bore in on that. What does the source of their memory problems have to do with anything? I mean, it might be nice, you know, to borrow from the guys across town, it might be nice icing on the cake. But what's it got to do with anything? Defense was perfectly capable and did bore in on their memory problems, cross-examine them, and so forth. So what was the defense prevented from doing?
Your Honor, I would agree with you with respect to ABAK. I respectfully would disagree with respect to ABCR. With ABAK, you can see that the defense counsel was able, because of the previous trial transcript, was able to hone in on the severity of his mental defects and how that would affect his ability to perceive, and that was directly relevant. He established that link between substance abuse, drug use, emotional defect and mental defects, and credibility. And this court in Reese, United States versus Reese, held recognized that most neuroses, substance abuse, mental disorders like that are highly relevant to the issue of credibility, especially in a case, in a close he said case like this, and that was a substantially similar issue and a similar confrontation clause analysis. But with respect to ABCR, the defense was left with a statement by ABCR that he had memory and perception issues and couldn't establish the link between those issues and what he actually perceived, and a link between why those memory issues mattered.
Well, isn't that pretty damning?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Isn't that pretty damning? You say they had that from him. So where are we? I mean, you're drawing a differentiation between, you know, guy A and guy B, both of whom were admitted heavy drug users. Both of whom admittedly had memory problems. In the one, they had more because they had the transcript. But it sounds like they had much the same for the other guy. I mean, where are we?
Your Honor, I'm not quite sure that ABCR admitted that he was a heavy drug user. He said he was heavily drinking on that night.
Okay, he was heavily intoxicated, and he admitted to drug use, didn't he?
He admitted to some drug. He admitted
and
to some
admitted to memory problems, didn't he?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so what's the difference?
Well, there's a difference between somebody who is observes something and when they're drinking, and somebody who has who's self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. That's from the CCA's opinion, but it was not known to the defense that he was self-medicating with drugs and alcohol during this time period. So, as in Reese, substance abuse and self-medicating, as he was doing, was relevant to, you know, the long-term effects of his memory and perception, and that was the heart of the issue. It was the severity of his mental defects and how, you know, potential self-medicating with drugs.
Is it the fact of self-medication without more, or what is it?
The fact of self-medicating, that's part of it, because that calls to question whether the person would actually have the capacity even to remember. An occasional person who's...
Well, but you've got that. You've got him saying he had memory problems. You've got him saying he was intoxicated on the night in question. And you've got him saying he's a drug user.
But
I really don't see the difference between A, B, and C, what's his name, R.
Your Honor...
A-K? Yeah, A-K and C-R.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, ABCR's testimony stated that, I mean, he had memory issues, but the jury was left with the impression that while he's a person who has memory issues, they were left without, the defense wasn't able to state to the members why that mattered.
But the rule, as I understand it, when it comes to the constitutionally required exception to a privilege or things of that nature, in the context of cross-examination, isn't that you were able to conduct a perfect cross-examination. It's that you were able to mount a defense, that you were able to delve into the area to some extent, right? I mean, where is the case that says that you have a constitutional right to have everything in front of the members with no limitations?
Yes, Your Honor, but this was not defense counsel trying to hammer home the point that he has memory issues. This was the defense counsel wanting to present that those memory issues that he's talking about, they actually are linked to his actual ability to perceive the event that he's testifying to accurately, and then 3 years later recall that, because somebody with just general memory and perception issues, and that's what the jury was kind of led to believe or left with, the defense counsel couldn't rebut that there are underlying illnesses that are that prevent him, even though he believes he accurately remembers, that contradict that belief and that memory and show that he doesn't even have the capacity to form those memories or to accurately remember them 3 years later.
But in terms of building on Judge Ryan's question, we have to look, too, at prejudice, a reasonable probability that would have resulted, would have the defense would have obtained a different result. It seems a little bit like you're engaging in color commentary rather than something that would be really substantive for the panel in terms of their determination about some ephemeral quality of lack of honesty or ability to perceive.
Yes, Your Honor. The government has to establish harm, and it's not that I don't necessarily believe it's outcome verdict determinative. In this case, it kind of is, but it's whether he was essentially, Senior Airman Chisholm was essentially deprived of his best defense, and it tipped the scales of credibility, the lack of this information going before the members tipped the scales of credibility in the government's favor. In this case, yep, when looking at the government's case, he was Senior Airman Chisholm was acquitted on all counts that were eyewitness only by ABAK. The conviction.
So why doesn't that show just how devastating the information about their that particular witness's inability to perceive and then to relay that information? Why doesn't that show that, in fact, the defense was very able to show the problems with that witness?
I agree, Your Honor, with it showing it with ABAK. But if you look at the cross-examination, the defense counsel was able to draw that link between his underlying mental illnesses, and show how those were highly relevant to his credibility of perceiving those instances that he testified to, and contradicting the believability of his in-court testimony. To the same extent, the mental health records would have enabled defense counsel in this case to make a similar showing on ABCR, but he was not able to go in as much depth. He was left with just that he has memory and perception issues, not to go into to expose and link those memory and perception issues related to the incident that he's testifying to.
Does it matter that they're self-admitted memory and perception problems? This isn't something where you have another party saying he has problems. He is saying to the panel members, I have problems.
I think, Your Honor, I think that's relevant to considering whether, you know, this would have been a waste of time or confused the jury if this would have...
Or cumulative.
I still disagree respectfully, Your Honor, that it's cumulative because it doesn't explain why that matters. And it was not that he had memory and perception issues. It's why those memory and perception issues could affect his testimony. And linking memory and perception to the in-court testimony, that was the credibility, that was the crucial credibility determination that the defense counsel wanted to make with these records.
What's the difference between getting this stuff in and saying he has memory and a perceptive, he has memory problems that affect his credibility because he has X, and saying he has memory problems that affect his credibility?
Because this, Your Honor, goes directly to what he's asserting that he remembers. This is not
just like Judge Ryan. You lost me there. I can't escape what Judge Olson's observation that, you know, this is icing on the cake, and the cake's already in.
There's still a qualitative difference between somebody who has general memory issues but believes that in court their memory is accurate.
Did the witness in this case testify that one way or another as to whether the memory issues that he acknowledged affected his perception in this case?
That they affected his perception generally, but not as it relates to the actual incident in there.
Secondly, since we're dealing with a sealed record, let's approach this from the point of view of a hypothetical. If the underlying record was one of dementia, a diagnosis of dementia and severe inability to recall, what is your legal analysis in that situation as to what precedents you would rely on or how you would contend as to whether there was a requirement in this case for access to mental health records of dementia in a case where a person has testified generally as to memory issues?
Chief Judge, I see that I'm running out of time.
You may answer the question.
Thank you. If I understand it correctly, it's the threshold determination of whether the mental health records would fall under the MRE 513.
Right. In other words, you have a case, if you had a case in which there was no examination of the records at trial, and then on appeal, on the issue of whether the denial of that opportunity to review the records would reveal that there was a diagnosis of dementia to the point severe inability to recall. Where are we if we have that case?
I think the judge is faced with a threshold determination of whether 513D8 applies or whether the records are non-privileged. And if there is a threshold showing that there's a reasonable belief to believe that the mental health records would contain information that falls outside of the scope of the record, or outside of the scope of the MRE 513, they would in-camera review would be necessary, and 513E3 requires that.
And is there anything in this case which would have alerted the judge, again, as to whether there was dementia or something else? Or is there anything that the party could have done to better help the judge understand whether there was dementia or something else that would have a significant impact on the mental, on the ability to recall?
Yes, Your Honor, the showing that defense counsel made during the motions hearing, and is also referenced in the CCA's opinion and in JA 165 to 168, he put on the testimony of ABCR and it established that the records established certain things that he believed he might suffer from, which was PTSD, and again, that's in the CCA's opinion. And also that there were additional diagnoses and that the records contained more information on those. And those go to the credibility, those go to ability to perceive and remember, and that's quintessential cross-examination material that falls within the scope of the confrontation clause and would be required to, and wouldn't fall under the privilege under 513D8.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Government may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Mary Ellen Payne, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Kubler, we represent the United States in this case. The military judge did not abuse his discretion by deciding not to conduct an in-camera review of the mental health records in appellant's case. Furthermore, he did not err by failing to disclose any of the mental health records because nothing in those records was constitutionally required to be disclosed. And finally, the Confrontation Clause simply is not at play in this case when the issue was one of disclosure rather than actual confrontation at trial. Starting with the question of the in-camera review and whether or not the military judge abused his discretion, what this really boils down to is what it means to be constitutionally required, because the military judge had to take that into consideration. And what constitutionally required ultimately means, in when we're talking about the disclosure of evidence, it means materiality. Was there a reasonable probability that something in the records would cause the result of the proceeding to be different?
But the military judge didn't even look. So why don't we have a situation here where the government's position would put the defense in future cases in a catch-22, where either a military judge would say, listen, you have all this basis for me to look at the mental health records of this individual. And because you have all this information, anything that I would find in those records is cumulative. On the other side, if the defense doesn't have much information, the military judge would say, you haven't provided a sufficient basis for me to look at those mental health records. Why shouldn't it be a situation where, as long as the defense provides a sufficient basis, the military judge needs to conduct an in-camera review there in order to make an informed decision about whether the material in there is material, whether it is cumulative?
Well, Your Honor, and I think that the situation that you've just proffered, I think that that may happen in many cases, and I think that that is just the result of the standard of constitutionally required being high. And the Supreme Court has continually noticed that and recognized that. And I'd like to draw the court's attention to United States versus Valenzuela Bernal. And that was a case that's analogous because it involved potential defense witnesses who had been deported after the government talked to them, but before the defense had the chance to talk to them. And in order to establish a constitutional violation, the Supreme Court said defense must show materiality. And we understand and we recognize that defense is sort of at a disadvantage because you aren't able to interview these witnesses, but that doesn't change the constitutional standard, and
But why are you making the argument that you're making instead of the more limited argument that you could make, which is simply that in this case, the defense failed to make a reasonable link between what they were speculating was in the records and anything that they would do with it? They were just on a fishing expedition. And that in that context, the military judge doesn't have to do anything. Whereas if they had some reasonable link, that the military judge should, as Judge Olson said, have at least looked at the records.
Well, and I agree with that. And I'm not suggesting, Judge Ryan, that it's an materiality is an impossible standard for the defense to meet. But I certainly do agree that in this case, defense counsel could have done more to establish that link, and they did not do so in this case.
I understood the military judge to say you didn't make a link. You're speculating, and that's not enough to cause me to go look at the records. You're just speculating.
No, and I agree. And he said, you haven't explained to me why this is material to your defense. And so I believe that he was holding the defense to the correct standard. He continually asked them for a link. He gave them multiple opportunities. He allowed a motion for reconsideration, and ultimately felt.
What could they have done in your view would have provided a sufficient link?
So, and this gets a little bit to the point.
Sufficient link to trigger the need for the military judge to look at the record.
Right, and I think this goes to maybe what Judge Efron was getting to. There was information that they had that, for example, ABCR had proffered that he had certain, perhaps, diagnoses. And supposing that had been dementia, defense could have put on their, we know they had an expert in this case. They could have gone on to WebMD and printed something off. They could have presented some sort of evidence that says X, Y, and Z illnesses affect a person's ability to even form memories or perceive. And so we have a reasonable belief, there's a reasonable likelihood that there is going to be information about this particular disease in the records, and we know that this disease causes these particular memory problems. That may have gotten them closer, but they didn't put on that kind of link. They just proffered, well, he's talked about his memory issues. And the military judge found...
Well, does that require them to guess at his condition?
Well, in this case, I believe...
At his diagnosed condition. You know, somewhere in the 5 zillion pages of the DSM, there's what he has. But doesn't that require the defense essentially to guess where in those thousands of pages of the DSM it is and what it is?
Well, in some cases, they might just be guessing, and that probably isn't enough. But in this case, ABCR had testified about potential diagnoses that he might have had. And so that's where, in this case, they may have been able to draw a link, Your Honor.
So your follow-up on Chief Judge Stuckey's question, your view is if they had gone to the DSM, that would have made a difference. That presupposes that the judge would have no background at all to alert him in this case that if somebody says, I've been diagnosed by mental health providers as to mental health conditions, in the same sentence that he's talking about his memory problems, that would have given the judge no hint at all that there might be a diagnosis there that would bear upon his ability to recall.
I think it just depends on the particular facts of the case and the particular illness and how well that illness is,
so let's
is known.
Let's take this case in the hypothetical I presented before. The exact testimony that you discuss in your brief on page 4. CR testified he mentioned his memory loss and memory issues with his mental health providers and agreed he had been diagnosed with certain mental health conditions. What if on review that mental health condition is severe dementia? How would anyone know, based upon that testimony, whether the mental health condition was severe dementia or was something so mild that it would have virtually no impact on his memory? How would anyone know in advance which one of those things might be in those mental health records?
Well, Your Honor, I would say if it was severe dementia, then I would probably expect that there to be other evidence out there that the individual was just so incapacitated as far as memory that it would be more apparent. But those weren't exactly the facts that we had in this case.
Right.
And there wasn't
so
a good
it's your view, it's your view that there has to be some external evidence beyond the person's deployment, beyond the person that they say they have mental health problems on their own, that he has mental loss, and that he's seen a mental health provider. That's not enough to trigger a requirement to review, that the defense has to go out there and do its own mental health diagnosis of an individual that they can't otherwise interview. Is it your view that they need to hire their own psychiatrist to interview the person?
Well, they did have a forensic psychologist in this case. They had an expert, Your Honor, and I do think that the defense does have some burden to go and find out what they can find
about
piercing
the privilege.
Did
that person do an interview diagnosis in this case?
I don't know that it's clear. I think it's clear from the record that when they were interviewing the witness that their psychologist was present, but I don't know. I don't believe he would have done an actual exam of this particular witness.
If the defense had gone to the court martial and said, I want you to... Your Honor, I want you to order that individual to be examined by my expert here in order for the defense to make the showing that's required for mental health experts. Would the judge have been had any requirement to grant that order, or what standard would apply there?
Well, I certainly think there would have been a requirement that defense actually show that they really had a need to have that type of examination conducted. And then you're probably talking about, you may be talking about a materiality requirement, or I don't know, you may actually get into, you know, RCM 701 and 703, which is probably less than a materiality requirement.
Right, we're just talking about the Constitution here.
So if we're just talking about the Constitution, then it's about materiality, and that is what the defense would have had to show, and they just did not make the link. And if we look, the military judge, his application of the law, and the military judge holding defense to that standard and requiring them to make that link. It was a reasonable application of the law, and it was not an abuse of discretion if we're looking at the abuse of discretion standard in this case.
At the time of this hearing, was it known that the evidence in this case consisted primarily of the testimony of two individuals whose credibility would be at issue?
I am not sure. I don't think at that point the judge knew the entire scope of the evidence that the defense intended to put on or that the government was going to put on. I'm sure that the military judge knew that these witnesses test. I'm sure he could gather from what was presented that these witnesses' testimony would be important. And the government acknowledges that these witnesses, their testimony was important, but that doesn't relieve the defense of their duty to show materiality
and
in this case.
Does materiality apply only to witnesses that are presented by a party, or can materiality pertain to cross-examination of a witness put on by the other side?
I think it's fair to say that it does extend to cross-examination that might be presented. I still don't think that this makes that a confrontation clause case. I still think we have to look at this and examine it through the lens of due process rather than the confrontation clause. But if we look at United States versus Bagley, which is a case involving the non-disclosure of evidence, and the Supreme Court says there's no limit on cross-examination, this isn't a cross-examination issue, but it is a materiality due process Brady issue because some of the evidence that we're talking about could have been used for cross-examination.
So why isn't this a Brady case?
So this is not a Brady case because the evidence that the defense was seeking was not available to the prosecutor or to the government. It was in the hands of government entity, but not in the hands of a government entity that was participating in investigation.
Could the commander who referred this case to court-martial have issued a general officer letter of reprimand based upon those mental health records?
I believe there is an except. It would depend. I mean, I think the general officer isn't, the commander is not going to be able to get into the records unless he can show that there's a command need to get into the records. And I don't think that the records necessarily reflect that command had a need to know that. So
the command had a need to know that this individual was going to be sent to a court-martial. Why would that preclude the commander under his or her powers under the rules for court-martial to decide that something else would be done, an administrative discharge, a letter of counseling, reprimand, all those things? Wasn't the person who had prosecutorial discretion in this case authorized to use these records in an adverse manner against the appellant in this case? I'm
not sure that I agree that's the case. And in any event,
I'm not asking you to agree with anything. So I'm asking you a question. Under the regulations of your service, was the commander who exercised prosecutorial discretion in this case precluded from using those records to take adverse administrative action against the individual, against the witness?
I believe that there may be and I haven't looked into this recently. I believe that there may be some, in some mental health regulations and some AFIs, there may be some limitation on that, but I would have to look into that and get back to you on
that. Doesn't that go to the whole question of whether these were government records or not? Accessible not to the trial counsel in this case, unless the trial counsel was the one who exercised prosecutorial discretion, but to the commander who exercised prosecutorial discretion.
Well, and I think the distinction is not whether you could have access to them, but whether or not you actually did. And there's no evidence in this case that the command had actually gotten access to the record. If the command had gotten access to the records and say, we need to look at them, then I think we're a different story. I think we maybe are in Brady territory here. But that's not what happened in this case, and there's no indication that the records were in any way accessible to the, or that the prosecutor had them in their possession. They were protected by a privilege, and in fact, they weren't provided until AFCA issued an order requiring them to be provided.
Counsel, is your winning hand based on prejudice?
No, Your Honor. I think it's based on materiality, and materiality.
But if you were to lose on that, is your winning hand, are you relying on prejudice?
Well, I think that we would, I think that there is an extremely strong prejudice argument.
And could you spell out the government's position in that regard?
Yes, Your Honor. At the end of the day, nothing in the records would have changed the results of this particular case. There was no, first of all, there was nothing in the records that particularly led to the conclusion or specifically said that ABCR had any type of memory issues on the night in question. The night in question that we're talking about where he is observed appellant using cocaine was in the summer of 2012. There are no mental health records at all between April 2012 and March of 13. And there's nothing in the records that we do have that suggests that any type of memory problems were occurring at the particular time where he, when he observed appellant using cocaine or with a bag of white powder. A lot of, some of the evidence, without going into specifics, that defense points to that was in the records that they say would have been useful, the government asserts that it was inadmissible character evidence under Rule 404A, so highly questionable whether or not it would have even been admissible at court-martial, much less constitutionally required to be released. There was no real nexus to what was in the records, to the actual facts in this case. Appellant says that some of the records support a theory that ABAK was influencing ABCR to testify untruthfully in the, to testify untruthfully about appellant, but that just isn't borne out by the actual facts that came out during trial, during testimony. What we heard was actually that ABCR said that he hadn't been friends, he ended the friendship and hadn't really talked to ABAK since the winter of 2012. The case wasn't, this trial didn't go to trial until January of 2015. ABAK admitted that there had been a no contact order between the two for at least a year. So this theory that the defense is proffering, that they say this evidence in the mental health records was so important to establish, it just really isn't borne out that that was a plausible theory that would have somehow changed the trial or changed the outcome of the trial in this case. And so based on all of those factors, simply there's no materiality. There would have been no difference in the chain, in the outcome of the trial. And there's
did
no prejudice.
Did it go in that there was bad blood between, I think it was CR, on the basis that he'd slept with his wife?
So it was appellant
slept with her before
had slept with AK's wife before,
right,
they got married.
Before they got married.
And so that did come out, and defense did, and Your Honor, I see him about
did
to another.
Did come out?
It did come out. They cross-examined
that. That answers my question.
All right, and so I see that I'm running out of time, so if there are no further questions, may I briefly conclude?
Yes.
The military judge's decision not to conduct an in-camera review in this case was reasonable and therefore not an abuse of discretion. Even if the military judge should have conducted an in-camera review, ultimately there was no constitutionally required information in those records that was required to be disclosed. We ask that this court affirm the findings and sentence in this case. Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Your Honor, the
The appellant concedes that it was harmless as far as AB AK. But ABCR, and I do want to make a couple of references, page number references, to the sealed material. And this is in support to show that, I mean, that the defense counsel was left with the witness's interpretation of what his memory and perception issue was. But what was really the key and crucial factor was the whether he had the ability to even make that determination, whether he could perceive. And if you look at the top
had of the ability to interpret his condition, is that what you're saying?
I mean, was that even a credible statement? Could the defense counsel even rebut that statement that his memory was even accurate? And if he would have had the access to the
It's accurate or it's not, and presumably his saying it's not benefits the defense. So
it benefits to some extent, but it's not.
I know it's not enough. Is the defense's contention?
And I don't believe that it's just a hammering home just to spout out a bunch of mental health disorders. That wasn't even necessary. The judge could have easily just said you can ask the question of whether his memory
or the judge could have easily looked at it in camera and said, I find this is to be all cumulative.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree because I don't believe he could make that determination at the pretrial stage without hearing, without reviewing the records prior to even
reviewing. If he had conducted the review,
if he had conducted,
could have then said, there's no basis to let this in. There's no basis to breach the privilege to put this in.
Well, Your Honor, we argue that they're not covered by the privilege because they do fall within what would be normal permissible cross-examination, and 608 would allow that to come in. It's always relevant. Because the issue is not just a general memory and perception, maybe it was just one additional question or so, that these memory and perception issues are linked to mental health disorders that you were suffering from during the time period in question. And I'm sorry, Your Honor, but maybe that would have been enough under the constitutional requirement, and then any more would be a hammering of it home. But defense counsel was prevented from even asking those questions, and that's what the constitutional error was. And had he been able to link those and shown the depths and severity, which was really material, that would have changed the outcome of this case because the government's case hangs by the thread of that credibility and that one sparse memory that the witness claimed was accurate and the defense couldn't rebut. So under these circumstances, the government can't prove that that error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
You're saying the government can't. That's your assessment of the evidence. In terms of where we are procedurally now, isn't it then the responsibility of this court to take a look at the evidence that was produced at the appellate level? And this court could conclude either that it was material or otherwise prejudicial to not have that information available for cross-examination, or alternatively, that it was merely cumulative. I'm not asking you to concede that, but aren't those possibilities before us right now that we could look at the information that you've pointed to and say that it's merely cumulative and not material? I'm not asking you to concede that, but isn't that where we are procedurally now in terms of this particular question?
And, Your Honor, I see I'm out of time. Can I answer Judge?
Please answer the question.
Your Honor, yes, it's a de novo review. That part of it, we would argue, is a de novo review. The abuse of discretion would be to whether the judge erred in not finding that it was necessary, that there was a reasonable basis to find that it was necessary to do the in-camera review. That's reviewed for abuse of discretion. And then that discretion is cabined by operation of the rule 513E3, which says if it's necessary, then the judge shall conduct that review. But I believe the constitutionality of whether it falls under the Confrontation Clause, whether it was relevant, material, and highly probative, that inquiry is de novo by this court. Respectfully, Senior Airman Chisholm asks that you set aside his conviction.
Thank you, Counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. Court will be in recess until 09:30 tomorrow.